You just heard the 2020 mix of Alter Ego by Tame Impala. Before that, you heard Ghosts by Desire. And before that, you heard a song called Bella by Tancredi. And I'd like to give a shout out to Monsi for introducing me to this artist. All right, before we keep going with music, I'm going to let you know about a few shows you should also listen to on WRCT. Moths in the Mixers, Prosthetics, Meaningful Music, Radio Free Radio, Saturdays 6 to 8 p.m. on WRCT. Don't worry about what's in it, you know you will enjoy it. Tune in to Cold Cuts, Fridays 8 to 9 p.m. only on WRCT Pittsburgh. Alright, this next song is from Stereolab. This is Barack Plastic.
Listening to WRCT Feedback Radio.
Well, everybody, they passed something. They did pass something, and we're going to talk about what that something is after months of negotiations, as some have called them. The House on Friday passed a much smaller $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill. Not every Democrat voted for it, and some Republicans voted for it. Those Republicans are now being told they are going to be removed by other Republicans, but we're going to get to that. It does finally give Joe Biden something that can be called a win. It's a much smaller win than I hoped for the good of the country. It's a much smaller win than Democrats, most of them, hoped for from the standpoint of politics. But it did pass the House 228 to 206. And this is mostly a bill with what Republicans would call real infrastructure spending. Now, we don't really go by calling things what Republicans call them, because if we did, we'd be very stupid. But so what others refer to this type of spending as is hard infrastructure. Big investments in roads, bridges, waterways, and other things that we're going to talk about. Some that I'm pleased to see, to be perfectly frank. 13 Republicans voted in favor of this bill. 6 Democrats voted against this bill. The 13 Republicans voting in favor, mostly the folks we aren't surprised to hear would cross party lines to vote in favor. The Democrats voting against, supposed progressives, as they are often described. And, you know, we can talk later about whether we're surprised that they voted against it or not. Nancy Pelosi was negotiating. Biden was helping try to get it done. And finally, on Friday, they got the vote. Now the House goes to a recess. Then they're going to take up the social spending bill, also known by some as Build Back Better. Many saying that's dead. Others saying, no, sir, it might pass. What some have said they want before they will consider the Build Back Better bill is a score from the CBO as to the total cost and economic impact of the social spending bill slash Build Back Better bill. So this is not that. This is the infrastructure bill. Now, again, remember, this is, if you already were ashamed at the size of this package, okay, because it's 1.2 trillion instead of 2-3 trillion, it's number one, 1.2 trillion over 8 years, and only 550 billion of the 1.2 trillion is new spending. The rest is to fund existing programs. So what we're talking about here is a package that is $69 billion per year in new spending. For an economy the size of the United States economy, this is not a massive package at all. We're not talking about an amount of spending that should be this difficult to get done. Now, what is in the bill specifically? Well, let's look at it. $110 billion for roads, bridges, infrastructure, fix-ups across the country. All right. $73 billion for electric grid and power structures. Even that, some Republicans were saying, that's not really what we should be doing in infrastructure spending. Hint, it is. $66 billion for rail services. We have some of the most pathetic rail in the rich, developed world. $65 billion for broadband. We have pathetic broadband access in the U.S. $55 billion for water, or water, as some say. That's, again, there are still part. Can they even drink water in Michigan out of the tap yet, in Flint, Michigan? I don't think they can. $21 billion for environmental remediation, $47 billion for flooding, coastal and climate resiliency, very much needed as we deal with sea level rise, $39 billion to modernize transit, $25 billion for airports. Our airports, many of them are pathetic. $17 billion for port infrastructure. Remember, they're mad we don't have more room in ports to get the Chinese tchotchkes in for Christmas, but they also don't want to spend on ports. Well, this bill would do some of that. $11 billion in transportation safety programs, $7.5 billion for electric vehicles and charging. I would honestly like to see that much higher. I would also have loved to have seen spending on retrofitting homes to be completely electric. But when you go electric, you can't have that inefficient electric baseboard heating. We want to go with the super efficient heat pumps and mini split systems and then solar. You can go house by house. Listen to a very interesting podcast about this recently. You put solar panels on the roof. You get all of the oil and gas heat out. You get the inefficient window ACs out, right? I mean, you go to fully electric, but efficient electric. Would like to see more on that. Okay, $2.5 billion in zero emission buses, $2.5 billion in low emission buses, and $2.5 billion for ferries. Now, you might notice nothing for sinks and showers, which Donald Trump was obsessed with, nothing for toilets. It seems we're not really having to flush toilets 10 to 15 times under Joe Biden, as Donald Trump predicted, but a lot of good things being done. Now, if you add that all up, it's $544 billion. I called it roughly $550. What's the rest, you might be saying? It's a $1.2 trillion package. David, you only read 550 worth of spending. Well, it's programs already in existence. And again, the fact that there's this much arguing over a bill that, as it's left, mostly funds existing programs, it is globally humiliating. So politically, Biden needed something. This is something. It's not great. Without it, it's a political disaster for Joe Biden. And with it, there's still more stuff to get done, but it's at least something to justify another 3 months in the Oval Office, right? It keeps you treading water. You've not drowned, but you're not safe on shore either. It keeps you treading water is sort of the way that I would describe it. So that's what's in the bill. That's what passed so far. We now have to talk about instantly the Civil War Republicans again coming for their own, saying those 13 Republicans who voted for this, we got to remove those people. So, OK, we already talked about mostly Democrats, but not all Democrats, combined with a few Republicans in the House, came together. They passed a much smaller than initially proposed bipartisan infrastructure bill. Good. Some Republican House members broke with Republican Party leadership, like Kevin McCarthy, who were saying, don't help Democrats pass the bill. They weren't making an argument about the necessity of the bill. They weren't making an argument about anything other than don't help Democrats pass the bill. Trump Republicans are absolutely furious with those few Republicans that voted for the infrastructure bill in the House. And they are now vowing to remove the Republicans from the House. Quite frankly, this is great. Democrats are not very competent. We have a competence problem. And certainly I can speak to the United States. If you've been watching the Kyle Rittenhouse trial with us, you very quickly see there's just a lot of incompetence in general, in the general public. And that means a lot of Democrats aren't competent. And that applies to the Democratic Party. Last week's election results looked terrible for Democrats heading into 2022. The biggest gift that Republicans can hand to Democrats is that they fight amongst themselves. 13 House Republicans crossed party lines and they voted in favor of the bipartisan infrastructure bill. Six Democrats also crossed party lines and voted against the bill. And Republicans are going nuts over those 13 Republicans. Florida Republican Congressman Anthony Sabatini tweeted, quote, every Republican who voted for the infrastructure bill must be eliminated from the party. Colorado Representative Lauren Boebert, maybe one of the worst people currently involved in American politics, quote, rhinos, meaning Republicans in name only, just passed this wasteful $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill, but Pelosi did not have the votes in her party to pass this garbage. Time to name names and hold these fake Republicans accountable. North Carolina Congressman Madison Cawthorn tweeting, quote, vote for this infrastructure bill and I will primary the hell out of you. Josh Barnett, who calls himself an America First candidate for the Arizona House, tweeted, 13 Republicans just voted to turn America into a communist country. They should be pushed back on so hard till 2022 that their lives are miserable till we have them removed. By the way, building a bridge is not communist. Fixing roads isn't communist. Saying, hey, if we want people to buy electric cars, how about chargers for the electric cars? That's not communist. And in fact, all of those things support private industry in reality. Matt Gaetz also jumping on the bogus socialism fearmongering, tweeting, I can't believe Republicans just gave the Democrats their socialism bill. Not only is the bill not communism, the bill is also not socialism, but lots of his followers believe it. There has been this idea historically in the Republican Party. They love calling themselves the Big Tent Party. We welcome all sorts of views. We welcome this type of conservative and that type of, you know, OK, as long as you vote for Republicans and not for Democrats. Is voting with Democrats sort of the same as voting for Democrats in the minds of these Trump Republicans? I say let them fight. Encourage it, actually. It can only be good for the left. I would rather Democrats be more competent and win elections more regularly by being competent. I'm very worried that that's not the case going into 2022. And so I will take any help that the left can get, and Republicans fighting amongst themselves is a good thing in terms of helping the left. Now, at the same time, the stupidity of infrastructure bills are communist and socialist. That's something else. And I wonder if you went to these folks and you said, do you understand? Do you know about the military? Taxpayer funded socialism with mandatory vaccines to boot. But that's different. Of course, these are folks who, at the end of the day, they want King Emperor Trump. And reality doesn't really make a difference to them. They don't even know the things they want to destroy, but they know they want to destroy a lot of them in government. Remember, I was reminded of just such a classic political moment when former Texas Governor Rick Perry ran for the Republican presidential nomination. He had a bunch of departments he wanted to remove. Couldn't remember exactly what they were, but he definitely wants to remove them. Remember this insane moment?
And I will tell you, it's three agencies of government when I get there that are gone. Commerce, education, and the, what's the third one there? Let's see.
You need five.
Oh, five. Yeah, okay. So five. Commerce, education, and
EPA?
EPA. There you go. No, okay.
Let's stop deficit.
Seriously? Is EPA the one you were talking about? Or?
No, sir. We were talking about the agencies of government. EPA needs to be rebuilt.
But
there's
you
no doubt about
but
that.
But you can't name the third one?
The third agency of government, yeah. I would do away with the education, commerce, and let's see. I can't. The third one, I can't. Sorry. Oops.
So anyway, they definitely want to destroy a lot of the stuff the government is doing, and sometimes they don't even remember all of it. But now building roads and bridges is yet another thing, I guess, they don't want the government to be involved in. So my message is absolutely get these Republicans out, challenge them, primary them, do all of it, because the left needs help, guys. After last week, it's looking very ugly. Now, some of you wrote to me and said, David, you're exaggerating. It's not looking that ugly in 2022. Yes, it is. And even if we're not sure it's looking that ugly, do we really want to take any chances? My view is no. Let me know your thoughts. You can find me on Twitter at @dpacman. Our program, The David Pacman Show, does really depend on the support of our podcast listeners, of our YouTube viewers, of folks who listen on the radio or watch on TV or on Free Speech TV. We have something called the membership program. You can sign up on my website, joinpacman.com. We do a whole bunch of extra content for our paid members to show our appreciation, including another show every single day. So you've got the broadcast show, the podcast, and then we do another show called the bonus show for our paid subscribers. I would love it if you signed up. You can sign up at joinpacman.com. Also, you get commercial free audio feeds and video feeds of the show. So if you want to watch the entire thing with no commercials, you can do it as a member. If you want to listen to the entire thing with no commercials, you can do it as a member. We also have a discount code. That code is better21, and you can use it if you would like. All right. Big news, at least for now, and by tomorrow, this may be different. The Joe Biden vaccine, so-called mandate, as it is known, is going to be frozen, thanks to the decision of a panel of Republican appointed judges. Now, what we call the vaccine mandate, which is why I said so-called, is the requirement through OSHA that companies with more than 100 employees either have their employees get vaccinated and prove that they are vaccinated, or you just test them weekly for COVID. So it's not much of a mandate, but it's a protocol requirement, call it whatever you want. Remember that Fox News's protocol or requirement or whatever is stricter than what Joe Biden has put in place via OSHA. At Fox, you have to prove your vaccination status or test daily and wear masks in certain situations. All right. Well, per the Washington Post, a federal appeals court has frozen the Biden administration's new vaccine requirement for private companies. The federal appeals court in New Orleans, one of the most conservative appeals courts in the country, is giving the Biden administration until later today to respond to a lawsuit filed by Republican-led states and businesses. The decision was issued by a panel of three judges, all appointed by Republican presidents. This is the U.S. Circuit Court U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. The judges wrote that there was, quote, cause to believe there are grave statutory and constitutional issues with the mandate. They have stayed the mandate while it is assessed further. What started all of this was a lawsuit filed late last week, just before the weekend, by some Republicans, including Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry. Now, it's really important. This is a temporary freeze on Biden's, quote, mandate. It is not a ruling on the merits of the policy. They want more time to look at it. It's important to recall that vaccination requirements at the state level at local levels, by schools, by private companies. They have almost completely held up in court so far. The Biden requirement is different in two ways. Number one, it's broader. And number two, it's coming from the federal government. So it is different. That doesn't mean it's not going to ultimately stand. It is also not actually a mandate, since you can test out. Doesn't apply to employees who work remotely or outdoors. Doesn't apply to people who physically work where other people don't work or shop. And as we talked about last week, these requirements do work to get people vaccinated, very much so. You can argue that it should be against the law. You can argue that it's immoral, but it works, and it works really, really well. When we look at companies ranging from United Airlines to the New York Police Department to all sorts of companies, including ones where people were claiming, I'm not going to do it. It works very well. Now, going back to the politics, this ruling was signed by judges. One judge was a Reagan appointee, Judge Edith Jones, and then Kyle Duncan and Kurt Engelhardt. Both were appointed by Donald Trump. This was the New Orleans-based Fifth Circuit Court, considered one of the most conservative appeals courts in the country. It is likely that other circuit courts, even given the same case, would find differently. It is likely that such a decision would probably not be upheld by the Supreme Court if it ever got to that point. Although we have a little bit of a wacky Supreme Court right now, and you never know. White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain was asked, what do you think is ultimately going to happen? He says he's confident it will be upheld. Of course, he would say that, but let's listen to his reasoning.
I want to ask you before I let you go about the court ruling yesterday on the vaccine, on the vaccine protocols that OSHA is putting out, sort of the soft mandate. I don't want to call it a hard mandate because of the testing option. There's a freeze. What does that mean for the federal government's efforts? I mean, do you stop preparing for January 4th in the moment? How does this work?
Well, I think what it means for the time being is that the effectiveness of that vaccine requirement is frozen. I think it will certainly be well litigated, though, well before January 3rd. So I'm not sure it really has much practical effect in the short run. Look, these vaccine requirements have been litigated up and down the courts all over the country. State requirements, for example, one in Maine. And every single court before this one ruled that they were valid. The Supreme Court has turned back several times already various efforts to enjoin other vaccine requirements. I'm quite confident that when this finally gets fully adjudicated, not just a temporary order,
right,
the validity of this requirement will be upheld. It's common sense, Chuck. If OSHA can tell people to wear a hard hat on the job,
right,
to be careful on chemicals, it can put in place these simple measures to keep our workers safe.
So, of course, you would say that with the Trump travel ban, with all sorts of different things Trump did, no matter what courts were doing, you always say, I'm confident it will be upheld until there's actually a decision otherwise. But I do think Ron Klain is correct on this. That being said, there's a reasonable question. Was this requirement through OSHA the best way to deal with anti-vaccine Republicans, or had it actually served to energize them further? I'm very interested in how the French have done it. I have a family, aunt, uncle, cousins in France, and they came to me and they said, sir, because that's how my cousins talk to me. They are very respectful of me. They said, you know, here in France, we have a big anti-vaccine problem. We have the distrust of government people who are anti-vax, like in the U.S., and we have the distrust of big pharma people here in France, like in the U.S., and you've got a lot of people here who believe homeopathy will treat or cure or prevent COVID. You've got all of it. And if they had done a mandate in France, it would have been absolute pandemonium. France took a different approach where they said, you don't have to get a vaccine, but if you want to travel, you want to go to a movie theater, you want to go to a restaurant, you want to go to the great cafes where you get the salmon tartare and these great dishes, which I love there. If you want to do all of that stuff, you just are going to either need to be presenting a negative test from, I don't remember if it's 24 or how many hours, every single time, or you get vaccinated. And the brilliance of it was it diffused the narrative of a mandate, but it was like, this is something really annoying. And so you had some people from all walks of the anti-vaccine world saying, I'm not for the vaccine, but I just want to do something. There's a specific thing I want to do. It's not about just being able to go to work. So I'm going to go and get vaccinated. I don't want to have to test all the time. I want every time I want to go to a restaurant or whatever the case may be. So I'm wondering aloud, is that an approach that could have been maybe more effective? But then you have the question of, is that something Biden could really even do? Or does it have to be done at the state or local level? Our system is different than that, which is the case in France. So be curious to hear from you about that. A massive, cartoonish, dramatic episode has surfaced over the weekend because NFL football player Aaron Rodgers, who's the quarterback for the Green Bay Packers, is in the middle of a COVID, I don't even know what to call it. It's not really a scandal. It's sort of like an episode of stupidity, for lack of a better term. It's a wild story. And quite frankly, it's a reminder to us that there are dumb people in this country, in all professions, in all walks of life, with all educational backgrounds and of all economic circumstances. So here's the story. 37-year-old Aaron Rodgers tested positive for COVID. Didn't play yesterday against the Kansas City Chiefs. Great. He previously claimed to have been immunized. Now, whatever he meant by immunized, we now have learned he's not been vaccinated against COVID-19. He says he's allergic to the vaccines. He's taken ivermectin. He says a woke mob has come after him. They're trying to cancel him per NBC, all of this different stuff. Now, before we get into the new material on this, here is Aaron Rodgers in August when he was asked, have you been vaccinated? And he says, I've been immunized, which, okay, we'll talk about it in a second. Take a look at this.
Any conversation? Are you vaccinated and what's your stance on vaccinations?
Yeah, I've been immunized. You know, there's a lot of conversation around it, around the league, and a lot of guys who have made statements and I've made statements, owners who made statements.
Right.
You know, there's guys on the team that haven't been vaccinated. I think it's a personal decision. I'm not going to judge those guys. There's guys who've been vaccinated that contracted COVID.
Okay. So that was August 26th, and he says, I've been immunized. We, of course, are now learning among certain people, immunized means very different things. There are people who say, well, I haven't been vaccinated, but I was sick with COVID, so now I'm immune. There are other people, you go further down the rabbit holes, right, who say, I took ivermectin and received antibodies and azithromycin, and so now I'm immune. Okay, so he maybe was just lying, or he believed he had been immunized through some other means. It's not really clear. So then we get to this weekend. He's positive for COVID. He's not playing yesterday, etc. He appears on the Pat McAfee Show, sports analyst, podcaster, pro wrestler, color commentator, former football punter. Okay, Pat McAfee. And Rodgers says, well, you know, I've been getting medical advice from Joe Rogan's podcast and from Joe Rogan on the phone personally. And pay attention in this clip if you're watching. Pat McAfee, who's on the left, can barely contain his laughter. It's actually quite something here. Let's take a look.
And I consulted with a now good friend of mine, Joe Rogan, after he got COVID. And I've been doing a lot of the stuff that he recommended in his podcasts and, you know, on the phone to me. And I'm going to have the best immunity possible now based on the 2.5 million person study from Israel that people who get COVID and recover have the most robust immunity. And I'm thankful for people like Joe stepping up and using their voice. I'm thankful for my medical squad. And I'm thankful for people like Joe stepping up and using their voice. I'm thankful for my medical squad.
Okay, just repeated there for some reason. I don't know why.
And I'm thankful for all the love and support I've gotten. But I've been taking monoclonal antibodies, ivermectin, zinc, vitamin C and D, HCQ, and I feel pretty incredible.
Okay. It's fine, actually, to get advice from friends about their experiences, right? Like, if I tested positive for COVID, I would also go and talk to friends. What was the progression of your symptoms? And when, which that's not inherently bad, but coming up with the view that you got from Joe Rogan, which is counter to 99.99% of medical science, lying, or who knows what you meant when you said I've been immunized. And then you say this, you don't look particularly smart, I think is the point I'm trying to make. And Rogers has described himself as a critical thinker. He said it at another point during this interview, which I encourage you to check out. He said that he put together a 500-page set of research of some kind, which he gave to the NFL. And Pat McAfee asked him, how did the NFL respond? And Rogers said, well, they acted like I was a quack. And he at one point actually mentions that you heard him say there, I'm going to have the best immunity. And later in the interview, he explained, you know, look at the Israeli study, which says recovering from COVID gives you better immunity than getting the vaccine. Okay. Let's look. Oh, no. Yeah. We're not going to play a clip for that, but you can find that clip. So a lot of people have been mentioning that. What about that Israeli study? Does it actually say that you're better protected if you recover rather than being vaccinated? Rogers is repeating it. Others are repeating it. It's not actually what the study says. What the Israeli study says is, first of all, if you recovered from COVID on average, you're more protected against Delta than from only being vaccinated. And that appears to be true. In particular, if you've been infected more recently by a strain more similar to Delta, it appears that you are more protected against Delta if you recover from the virus rather than only get vaccinated, in the short term, at least. And that kind of makes sense, right? The vaccines were developed to tackle the original or live variant. At some point, maybe soon, we're going to have a vaccine that's actually tailored to Delta or newer variants. But the vaccines were developed based on the 2020 live original variant. So if you're infected more recently, and the vast majority of the infections have been more recent than from when the vaccine was developed, it's logical that your current protection against the current strain might be stronger. However, if you look at the Israeli study, it also says COVID recovery plus vaccine gives you the best protection overall. So wouldn't you want that, given the option between recovery or recovery plus vaccine, which gives you better protection? I would want recovery plus vaccine. And my preference would actually be not to get the virus at all. Also, that study is from August. It was published in August, and it's based on data slightly before that. The virus continues to change, and there's a real question as to how recent infection would compare to vaccination by next fall, for example. So as usual, a little bit of knowledge can be a very dangerous thing. All right. Now, there's a ton of stuff we could look at here. Here's another short clip where Rogers says no one wants to admit ivermectin works because there's no money in ivermectin, which is not true, but he almost stumbles upon something with a grain of truth.
If you're a healthy person who has a strong immune system, keep building your immune system and do what you got to do. Do what's best for your body. But that opinion, you know, doesn't work because we've given away billions of dollars to these pharmaceutical companies now for these vaccines, and it's not going to stop. Merck's coming out with a pill. Pfizer's coming out with a pill that's going to help. You know, it's basically the expensive versions of ivermectin. Why do people hate ivermectin? Not just because, you know, Trump championed it, because it's cheap generic. Can't make any money off it. But it's been used a billion times in India. Go look at that research. What's going on over there?
Yeah. So we've heard that none of these are new talking points. These are all talking points we're familiar with. The thing he gets close to is the reason that cheap generic stuff like ivermectin is tried against COVID is you've got a new disease. You've got people dying. You don't yet have vaccines. You don't yet really have treatments. So what do? You see, does anything I have that's cheap work? Okay. So the right analysis is, and we've talked about it before with doctors, you're sitting around, you go, what do? Okay, let's try hydroxychloroquine. Let's try ivermectin. It's cheap. Let's try azithromycin. Let's try zinc. Let's do vitamin D. The fact that it's cheap generic stuff is why it gets tried absent a known immunization or treatment that's been studied further. But this stuff has been tested. And I wish ivermectin was shown to work in randomized controlled placebo trials. I wish it was. It would be fantastic. But it hasn't. So he almost stumbles upon something that's like sort of true, but he just then goes completely off the rails. So this is really sad because these are the same opinions as lots of people on Facebook have, maybe your crazy uncle or whatever. But this is someone that is considered a, quote, role model by society. Not saying he should be, but he is. And unfortunately, a lot of people listen to what he has to say. So send me your thoughts. We'll have more on this Aaron Rodgers fiasco on our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. So at the start of today's show, we went over the passage in the House of Representatives of a much smaller $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill. And this may be good for Joe Biden. Joe Biden needs something good. Joe Biden needs to get something done. The negotiation on this bill has dragged on too long, in particular for how relatively little you actually got in the bill. And increasingly, there is this urgency for an accomplishment for Joe Biden, because if we just look at the numbers, this is just an empirical reality, Joe Biden's approval rating has hit another presidency low, the lowest point of Joe Biden's entire presidency. Now, I tend not to look at any one poll. I look at an average of polls. 538.com tracks an average of Biden approval polls. And if you're watching today rather than just listening, you will see on your screen right now that there's been a steady decline for Joe Biden's approval. This started around late July, and I mentioned it to you when it started, and it has continued to decline. And this has pulled Joe Biden down from around 53% approval, below 50, into the high 40s, mid 40s, and now down to the low 40s, 42.6% approval. That's the lowest of Joe Biden's presidency. Now, anecdotally, if you want to pick one poll, there are some polls that have Joe Biden in the 30s, and you could say disaster, even bigger disaster. There are some polls that still have Joe Biden near 50. On average, he is now in the low 40s. Now, there is not one explanation for this, and you need to understand a little bit of history in general to even start to interpret these results. And there's this kind of systemic historical reality of presidential approval, which is that it typically starts sort of high. And then typically, as the president does things that different people don't like, people change from saying I approve to I don't approve. And it's really difficult to get someone who stops approving back into the I approve category or column, which is why presidential approval tends to decline over time. And that's what we see over the majority of presidencies. Now, for Joe Biden, the trajectory has basically been approval started declining when the Delta wave of COVID started to look really, really bad. That's middle to late July. And we saw the approval start to decline. As I said at the time, ultimately, the buck stops with Joe Biden. The truth is, the Delta wave was more out of control in the United States than it had to be because of red state governors, anti-maskers, and anti-vaxxers. Really, they were to blame for the exacerbation of the Delta wave, not Joe Biden. But Joe Biden's the president, and the buck stops with him. And it's logical that if things are looking out of control, his approval would decline. Now, before Biden could recover from that initial decline, he was then hit with another problem, which was the withdrawal from Afghanistan. The withdrawal was correct, the right move, I supported it completely. It was time to go. It would have been just as chaotic if Donald Trump had done it, if not more. But it was Biden who did it. And the buck stops with him. And the media narrative, particularly from the right, but also from some centrist corporate media, of chaos really hurt Joe Biden further. As people started to forget about Afghanistan, remember, how long has it been since anyone mentioned it? It started to become, what is Joe Biden doing? Chaos at the border was a right-wing narrative. When is Biden going to have a big accomplishment became a broader and accurate narrative. That's a real question. When is Joe Biden going to have his next major accomplishment? He needed something, a big piece of legislation, the negotiation around the infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better bill. It dragged on and on. The attention became the relative power that Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema had rather than Joe Biden. It was taking oxygen, and the approval continues to decline. We now have some shortages and supply chain issues, which we had under Trump. Gas prices and inflation have climbed as the pandemic recovery continues, and Joe Biden is president. So fairly or unfairly, he gets blamed. That's the game. So now he finds himself at the bottom. I mean, so far the bottom. It could continue down. He is currently at the bottom of his presidency's approval. Now, you combine this with last week's losses and barely wins for Democrats. 2022 can't be said to be looking good right now. For those who say it's not looking that bad, okay, there's no indicator that 2022 looks good. First, the first midterm for a party that wins the White House is typically not good. In addition, Biden is at his approval low of his presidency, plus Democrats had some bad signals during last week's elections. Now, that being said, Joe Biden is still doing better today than Donald Trump was at 292 days into his presidency. Biden is doing worse than most presidents were right now. Obama was more popular at this point in his presidency. George W. Bush, thanks to 9/11, was way more popular. Clinton was more popular than Biden at this point in his presidency. George H.W. Bush was more popular. Reagan was more popular. But at this point in Trump's presidency, Trump's approval had already collapsed to 37% and Biden's between 42 and 43. So at least that's something to look at. Trump was still worse. That all being said, we may simply be in a sort of new era of politics in which presidential approval is mostly low because it's expected that if the person in the White House is from the other party, you say you don't approve, regardless of what the president has actually done. It's a sad reality we may be facing. Biden does need more wins, that I can assure you, and we'll see where the approval is a couple weeks from now. As you, of course, know, much of the American Republican Party has now had as a default view of election integrity. If we won, there was integrity. But if we lost, there was fraud and it was rigged. This is the premise of the big lie, as it's called, which emanated from Donald Trump's loss to Joe Biden back in November of 2020, now more than a year ago. Last week, before the election in which Republican Glenn Youngkin defeated Democrat Terry McAuliffe, you already had some Republicans claiming fraud. Here's an example I played for you last week. This was Virginia Republican State Senator Amanda Chase saying the Democrats are already committing voter fraud and she knows how.
Look, I'm all about fighting for the truth, too. And sometimes, unfortunately, we can't always rely on the media. I wanted to go there. I wanted to feel it. I wanted to see it. A picture's worth a thousand words. I know how Democrats are cheating. And that information has been given to the Youngkin campaign.
They're going to try to do it in Fairfax County.
Absolutely.
You know,
I'm already getting reports today that people are going to vote and they have never done a mail-in ballot ever. And yet when they went to cast their ballot, they were told, no, we've already mailed you a mail-in ballot. And so we're already looking into that.
That's why we told everybody in Virginia to vote early. So that couldn't happen. The earlier you voted, they couldn't do it. Now they're starting to do it.
There were other examples, but you get the idea. But then last week, Glenn Youngkin won the election. All talk of fraud ceased. None of them are talking about fraud anymore. Remember that there's this invisible, sort of like a flow chart. Did the Republican win? Yes. Then there was no fraud. That's essentially the way it works. Well, it turns out there was attempted fraud. Listen to this. NBC News is reporting that Glenn Youngkin's own 17-year-old son twice tried to vote last Tuesday on Election Day, even though you can't vote when you're 17 years old. In the U.S., you have to be 18 to vote. Now, he was not successful in his attempt to vote. News outlets are not naming him because he's a minor and he hasn't been charged with a crime. But by saying Glenn Youngkin's 17-year-old son, we know who it is. He showed up to vote and election workers figured out he's not eligible to vote. He's not registered to vote. He's 17 and he was not allowed to vote. The Fairfax County Office of Elections is investigating the incident. The Office of Elections said in a statement, "This morning, the general registrar was made aware of concerns that a 17-year-old male attempted on two occasions to vote on Election Day. The young man presented ID, but was ineligible to be registered due to his age and was not permitted to vote. The man was given a registration form and encouraged to register in the future." When he's 18 is what that means. Now, the funniest plot twist would be that he was trying to register to vote for Terry McAuliffe, not his own dad. We have no reason to think that that was the case. In all seriousness, what's sort of funny, but also not really funny, is that it doesn't actually seem like he committed a crime because of how the law is written, even though there are people in other states who are in prison for accidentally voting when not eligible. Fairfax County Registrar Scott Konopasek said, it's not clear any crime was really committed because the Virginia Criminal Code makes it clear if you use fraudulent information to vote, that's against the law. But simply trying to vote and being determined ineligible, that's not clearly addressed in the Virginia Code. And ultimately, the quote is, the man did not vote. He made no false statements. He did not disrupt voting. It appears as though no actual crime was committed. Now, that being said, remember in Texas, Crystal Mason, who was previously sentenced to 5 years in prison for making a mistaken vote that was not counted despite being ineligible. That's Texas. Texas upheld that sentence. We have a very different situation here in Virginia. But the people most loudly talking about the fraud seem to disproportionately be the ones attempting to commit it. So just a little minor follow-up story there from the Glenn Youngkin election in Virginia. We're going to take a quick break, and we have much more coming up right after this. All right, a couple of other quick stories for you that I wanted to mention. This is just really funny. Newsmax, the right-wing media network Newsmax, which has been railing against vaccine protocols, vaccine requirements, vaccine mandates for months at this point, has notified its own staff that it will be implementing a vaccine mandate. This is the vaccine. A vaccine mandate is coming to Newsmax, writes Mediaite. The conservative news network informed staffers of the move Thursday in a staff-wide email obtained by Mediaite. Newsmax cited the implementation of COVID rules by OSHA as its reason for instituting the mandate. The company decree requires all employees to be fully vaccinated by January 4th, or they will have to undergo a weekly COVID test. The email says, to ensure that we are in compliance, we require all vaccinated employees submit a copy of their vaccination card. The move is unlikely to be well received by the network's hosts, a number of whom have denounced vaccine mandates regularly. Let's just look at just one or two examples of that. And I think there is just a brief ad here we have to get by. Now, this is actually not that hypocritical, and I'll mention why in a moment. Take a listen to this.
Really did. He pushed America much closer to full-on medical apartheid.
Whoa.
A society that is fundamentally divided into two tiers. Biden used OSHA and other federal powers, and I really should say he abused those powers, to mandate that every single healthcare worker in America get vaccinated by early January. And all employees in companies with 100 or more workers must get vaccinated or face weekly testing. But today...
Now, I could go on and on with other examples of this. The truth is that you could take a position which is you can be against it, and the hosts can be against it, but if it's going to be the law, you're going to comply. And Newsmax could very much take that position. Now, with the temporary freeze on the vaccine mandate, which we mentioned earlier, maybe Newsmax will go back on this. I don't know. But what happened to taking a stand? What happened to I will not comply? What happened to we will never do that thing which we are against because it is our principle that is violated and all that different stuff? At the end of the day, at minimum, they seem to be complying. So this is not a commentary on the legality of it. Newsmax could be saying if it's the law, we're going to do it because we don't want to be testing people daily. This is not necessarily a comment on the morality of it, because they could be saying, well, if it's immoral, we're going to do it because it's too difficult otherwise to manage the testing and vaccination situation here. But this is a testament to the fact that the vaccine mandates work. And that's one thing that we've said time and again. If even Newsmax, which has been essentially completely against this in terms of their editorial position, is saying, but we're still going to do it, it is again proof that the vaccine requirements work. And that continues to be a very good sign. Hey, I want to kind of go through a sampling of the nutty stuff that happened over this weekend with Republicans. None of these clips that I'm going to play for you is sort of worthy of its own story. But sometimes it's just stunning how much absurdity the American right gets into over a 48-hour weekend, that I want to just give you like a little bit of a tour through the bonkers universe of the American right. So let's just look at a couple of things real quick. Melania Trump was given an award by the Log Cabin Republicans called the Spirit of Lincoln Award. And Melania gave a speech with a teleprompter, of course, even though Trump and the right hates teleprompters when Obama uses them. And it's just all very weird.
I amplified legislation and created awareness campaigns that elevated important issues such as foster care, sickle cell disease, social emotional learning techniques, and neonatal abstinence syndrome.
So just everything is so weird. It's hard to even know what the hell is going on with these strange awards that they hand each other. So that was Melania. Roger Stone, former guest on this show, convicted, pardoned. Okay, you know Roger Stone. Roger Stone appeared on Alex Jones's InfoWars and said InfoWars is what you can trust for the truth.
InfoWars is a beacon of freedom. That's why InfoWars can always be counted on for the truth. You can always go to InfoWars.com and find out what is really going on.
Yeah. Now, if you're curious about Roger Stone, check out the time I interviewed him. The big kind of weird story with that was up until about 30 seconds before the interview, you could hear him in the background trying to get out of the interview. And then he sat down and did the interview. Just an odd guy. And now this connection between, I mean, this guy was a Trump, as close to a friend as Trump ever had. Now, just openly saying InfoWars is the source that you have to trust. Senator Josh Hawley, one of the inciters of the January 6th insurrection, did a very strange sit down interview with Axios. And he went on a rant about the left attacking manhood, and he criticized video games and porn. Just strange. Take a look.
What's a man to you? Paint a picture.
What's a man? Well, a man is a father, a man is a husband, a man is somebody who takes responsibility. As conservatives, we've got to call men back to responsibility. We've got to say that spending your time not working, and we have more and more men who are not working, spending your time on video games, spending your time watching porn online while doing nothing is not good for you, your family, or this country.
So a viewer's watching this, and they're thinking, really? What the liberals are doing are going to push me to watch Pornhub more or play Donkey Kong more? Do you mean that literally?
Well, what I mean literally is that I think the liberal attack, the left-wing attack on manhood says to men, you're part of the problem. It says that your masculinity is inherently problematic. It's inherently oppressive.
What a weird interview. And continued right-wing obsession with these caricatures of what I guess they see as the alpha male and the beta male, and a very unusual rant, I guess. I'm struggling to even find the words for it. For a sitting senator to go on, but video games and porn, that's beta in the mind, I guess, of what Josh Hawley sees as manhood. Many anti-mask and anti-vax protests continuing over the weekend, not just in the United States, but in other countries, as we will soon see. Here's one from the U.S. Here is a picture of just one woman holding a sign that says masks are child abuse, which they're not. Masks are physical and psychological abuse, but psychological is misspelled on this woman's mask. So that's something. In a completely, I used this term last week in another one of these Kafka-esque moments. Here is Cancun Cruz, Republican Senator Ted Cruz, attacking John Kerry for flying to the climate conference last week on a private jet. And he points out, none of us have private jets. And then someone says, actually, Ted, Rob Portman does have a private jet. Take a look at this.
John Kerry has a private jet that has flown dozens of times this past year all around the country. I don't know about you, but I don't have a private jet. I don't believe any of the people on this stage have their own private jet.
Portman does. Yeah.
So... one of the issues with making this personal is you might have someone up on the stage where the personal makes you look like a hypocrite. And of course, the bigger issue is how much should we be talking about private jet use in thinking about climate? And as I talked about last week, the people that have the private jets are going to keep having the private jets. Let's get them off of fossil fuels and into renewables. That would be my preference. And of course, the vast majority of carbon emissions are not coming from aviation at all, never mind from private jets. I mentioned it last week. And then here's an Australian anti-mask, anti-vax guy who's listing all of the things he doesn't do. And hilariously, he says he doesn't satanize his hands. Instead of sanitize, it's satanize. This is wild.
I'm 60 years old. I don't socially distance. I never wore a mask during the whole lockdown. I always go to the supermarket as much as I like. I don't sterilize my hands or satanize them. I just live normally and naturally, just like I've always done. Of course, from time to time, like anybody else, I might get ill. And if I do, I go to bed, I have some honey and lemon tea, and I sweat it out, and then I recover. This is the way everyone should live. And I'm not against medicine, but I think medicine has taken too far. We have too much trust in...
Yes, the satanization of hands. That's really something else. So a wild weekend in right-wing la-la land, it's more scary than funny. You know, individually, we might look at a clip and we might say, oh, that actually is pretty funny. And we would be right to say it's funny. But the big picture is there is an entire movement, not just in the United States, but globally to some degree. We've seen it in Europe. We see it in Australia, et cetera, certainly here in the U.S. An entire movement based on not just ignorance, but pride in ignorance, pride in non-thinking, pride in rejecting empiricism and science. And that's a really, really bad thing. We have a voicemail number. That number is 2192-DAVID-P. We've been talking a lot about juries, including in the context of the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. I told my story of serving on a jury last week. And here is a caller who says, you know, I think lawyers want incompetent jurors. They don't want people who think for themselves. Take a listen to this.
Hey, David. It's Alex. I was just listening to your episode about incompetence in juries. And I'm actually a PhD student. And I had I have a thought about that. I feel like it may be more of a matter of selection bias in some sense than it is a matter of true incompetence. Mm-hmm. I don't know about your opinion, but at least in my experience, it seems like most lawyers try to select out the most competent jurors intentionally. And so what you're left with is those that are incompetent, rather than most people being incompetent. I don't know what your thoughts are, but that's mine.
So I continue to believe that a large portion of people are just incompetent at whatever they're doing. You go to retail stores or something like that. A lot of incompetence there. You think in law, everybody's competent. I've had some pretty bad experiences with incompetent lawyers. I think that there's two things going on. I think there are a lot of incompetent people in general in the population, but I do think that it may not be. I spoke to a couple lawyers about this who do jury trials, and they've said it's not that we want incompetent people on the jury, but we want what they described as simpler people. Now, that's pejorative in a sense, but what they mean by it, and they've explained it to me, is if you have a simpler jury, you can more easily predict how the jury will react to certain presentations, either of evidence, of testimony, etc. And that's why in big jury trials, like, you know, murder trials, etc., you may have a tendency not towards incompetence per se, but towards folks who are more likely to react in a predictable way rather than, quote, thinking for themselves in ways that may be unpredictable for both the prosecutors and the defense. That's what lawyers have told me. All right. We've got a great bonus show for you today. We will talk about the horrible surge in highway deaths. We're going to talk about sugar has been blamed a lot for obesity, but sugar consumption is down and obesity continues up. What can we make of this? And we will talk about the horrible tragedy at this Travis Scott concert. We're going to talk about crowd control and a lot of other things, all on today's bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com and you will get instant.
Hi, this is Kristen Hirsch. You're listening to 88.3 FM, WRCT, Pittsburgh.
It's been a long time since you've touched the hand and the heart of that special someone. You're not alone. This is WRCT Pittsburgh's Radio Automation Service. Stay tuned for more tracks from our radio and record library.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
We're the 1985, and whenever we're in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, we like to pick up 13-year-old runaways at the Greyhound station and listen to WRCT!
Woo! RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Hi, this is Felicia Collins from Late Show with David Letterman, and you are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
WRCT is the best place to be. He sends the music out your way 40 hours every day.
WRCT Pittsburgh. We're always here for you.
Senator John McCain, and I'm from Arizona. But when I'm in Pittsburgh, I always listen to WRCT, one of the finest stations in all of radio, and Carnegie Mellon University is one of the finest academic institutions in our country. Be sure at your next election to vote early and vote often.
Things get brighter day by day when you listen to the big W. Life is lighter in every way when you listen to the big W. So laugh it up and let yourself go with King Size Radio, the big WRCT Radio Carnegie Tech.
Listening to WRCT Pittsburgh's Radio Automation. Please stay tuned for more incredible tracks from our extensive, vast, libidinous, and
balls.
Awesome. I called it libidinous. That doesn't make any. I mean,
sure.
All right. Yeah.
Are we still taping?
Yeah. Sure. Go right ahead.
We're live. We're not taping.
Oh, we're live.
No,
okay.
We're taping.
We're taping. Okay. They want me to do a little promo, and what do I do? I say, WRCT. Is that it?
WRCT Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Hello and speedy delivery. This is Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and I'm in Pittsburgh. I always listen to WRCT right here in Pittsburgh. Speedy delivery to you.
Hi. You're listening to
WRCT
Pittsburgh. CMU. This is Sue Garner.
And Rick Brown.
Have some barbecue sauce.
Hey, this is Marlon Saunders, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
This is Brad Yoder, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
WRCT, this is the place that sets the pace for Pittsburgh.
From New York and Glasgow, this is Democracy Now!
The U.S. Department of Defense has a larger annual carbon footprint than most countries on Earth, and it also is the single largest polluter on Earth.
Today, we look at the seldom discussed link between U.S. militarism and the climate crisis. The U.S. military is one of the world's largest greenhouse gas emitters and the world's biggest consumer of oil. But military emissions have been exempted from international climate treaties for decades. We'll speak to two U.S. veterans.
It is absolutely imperative that we include U.S. military emissions in the overall accounting of greenhouse gases emitted into the atmosphere, even if it is politically inconvenient to do so.
Plus, we speak to Stella Morris, the partner of Julian Assange. She's in Glasgow highlighting WikiLeaks' role in exposing the hypocrisy of wealthy nations in addressing the climate crisis.
Julian should never be extradited because he was doing his job as a journalist. He's being criminalized as a journalist.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Negotiators at a crucial United Nations climate summit in Glasgow, Scotland, have released a first draft of the COP26 final decision text. It's being blasted by environmentalists as exceptionally weak. Greenpeace noted the 850-word document fails to acknowledge that fossil fuels are driving the climate crisis while making no commitment to tangible actions to end global reliance on coal, oil, and gas. The draft text release came as former President Barack Obama traveled to Glasgow, where he called on world leaders to step up their actions to avert climate disaster while blasting China and Russia for hindering progress on the climate emergency. Mitzi Tan, a youth climate activist from the Philippines, said Obama's words ring hollow.
The U.S. is the country that is historically most responsible for the climate crisis, and yet they have barely done anything. They have promised so much, they have pledged so much, but they're still not doing enough. Even their pledges, which they don't even have actual milestones to get to and plans to get to, aren't enough considering the amount of emissions, amount of pollution, amount of injustices that they have done to the rest of the world.
To see Democracy Now!'s extended interview with Mitzi Tan, go to democracynow.org. This comes as a Washington Post investigation found most countries' pledges to reduce greenhouse gas emissions are built on flawed data. The Post examined 196 country reports and found a giant gap between what nations declare their emissions to be versus the greenhouse gases they're actually sending into the atmosphere. Elsewhere in Glasgow, police reportedly used a battering ram early Monday morning to break into a disused former homeless shelter that had been converted into temporary squat for climate activists. Witnesses describe Metropolitan Police and Welsh forces going from room to room with batons drawn.